Hello, and welcome to Around and About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller. Today is Wednesday, May 10th, and on today's show, we're speaking with somebody who's going to talk to us about the power in vocal communities. My guest today is encouraging people to sing together in groups. Dr. Esai Barnwell joins us to talk about that. And for an example of what I'm talking about, singing together, singing in groups, think back to the civil rights marches of the 1960s.
We are not afraid. We are not afraid. We are not afraid today.
My guest is talking about why people used to do that and why we don't do it anymore. I mean, when you think about it, maybe in church you sing with groups of strangers, but that's just about it. And so Dr. Esai Barnwell is talking about how singing together can benefit both health and bring people together. She's an accomplished musician, actress, and author, a retired member of Sweet Honey and the Rock. She's also an internationally acclaimed award-winning composer and lecturer. She's going to be here Thursday, May 18th for the Cam Bush Endowed Lecture Series, and we'll be speaking with Cam Bush as well. But before I get to that, just to give a little bit more background on what Dr. Barnwell is talking about, we're going to hear an excerpt of a TEDx talk that she gave in 2015, and she makes reference to the Paris terrorist attacks in this. She gave this lecture shortly after those attacks happened.
Songs have a way of pulling us together instantly. Yes? We used to sing together all the time. We sang in school. We sang in scouts. We sang at camp. We sang in our congregations, at church or in synagogues. We sang in union meetings. Were there union meetings? Yes, there were union meetings. We sang at hootenannies, at rock concerts. We sang in bars. We sang everywhere we possibly could sing together in groups. And it was a powerful, fun thing. Last night I saw something amazing and moving. Last night, in the midst of trying to grapple with what had happened in Paris, the people in the arena began to sing their national anthem. It was so powerful. What was powerful about it was that it mustered all of their courage to do it. It brought all of their humanity, all of their intention to that moment and to that space, and bless that entire country. I think we would really do well to sing more often together. So I'm going to talk about that just a little bit, and I hope that we'll have a chance to do a little bit more before all of my time runs out. Mm-hmm. I would like to say to you that there is a wonderful composer, musician named Quincy Jones, okay? And Quincy Jones wrote this lyric. He said, "What good is a song if it doesn't inspire? And if it has no message to bring? If a song can take you higher, 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 well, then it's not good enough to sing." Songs have intention in themselves, but when we sing them together, we define who we are. We tell our own stories. We actually talk about the things that motivate and identify us. We share a common bond in that moment, even with people that you don't know, people you've never met. Our voices activate every cell in our bodies. Yes. And so running that vibration through our bodies changes us, usually for the better. I've not heard the contrary. So usually for the better. And when we are all singing together, not only are we running sound through our own bodies, we are sharing sound with everybody else. We are creating something so powerful. Most people will stop to listen. We know that, because we sang all the way through every major movement in this country. The civil rights movement, I think, was the crowning glory of people coming together and singing together. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. So Not only would we sing because we wanted to let people know what our issues were, we wanted to protect ourselves. And we knew that if we bonded together and held hands in this way and moved our voices forward, that in fact, the people who heard that sound would be transformed in some way. I think about that a lot.
That's Dr. Esai Barnwell speaking at TEDx Beacon Street in 2015. I'm speaking with her today because she's going to be here in Chattanooga on Thursday, May 18th. For the Cam Bush Endowed Arts for Health Lecture Series. It's part of CHI Memorial's Arts Medicine Program, which uses performing and visual arts to enhance healing. We'll be speaking with Dr. Barnwell as well as Cam Bush herself. Here's the conversation.
I want to talk about the TED Talk that you did, TEDx Talk you did in 2015. Something you said in that, our voices activate every cell in our bodies. What does that mean? What did you mean by that?
Sound is vibration, and there's no way that you can make a sound that does not penetrate every cell in your body. Skin cells, hair cells, all of it gets activated. And so, and it's not only when we sing, but it's when we speak as well. I mean, it's part of what keeps us alive and moving. And so it's important if you have the opportunity to join in an activity with other people where their cells are moving too. And sometimes they can be moving in harmony, which is really wonderful.
What's the connection between singing, music, and health?
I think anything that we can do to keep us healthy is a good thing. And health is a broad term. It can be our mental health, our physical health. It can be our attitudinal health. All of those things operate within us and kind of determine, you know, even whether or not we smile every day at some point in the day or are nice to other people. And so if we can have positive energy, harmonious energy, energy that excites us and moves us into new realms of thought, then I think all of that is very, very healthy. But there are degrees. I mean, I think that there are other kinds of ways of looking at this. I did a study at one point on the songs of coal miners and textile workers because I wanted to know whether the music that people created and the words that they put with those with the music were actually documentation of what they were experiencing in their lives. And that study actually revealed to me that coal miners and textile workers knew an awful lot about what was happening with their bodies and used their song as a way of documenting the course of their disease. We don't think of music in that way. We don't think of the songs that we write as having a consequence or having a reason. But in fact, many of our songs do have those purposes.
How did the songs do that? How did they document that sort of thing?
Well, you know, a coal miner might say, you know, I go to work on Monday and I feel fine. By Friday, I can't breathe. I'm coughing, I'm perspiring, I can hardly catch my breath. And then I go home on Friday when I'm not working and things get better. And then I go back to work on Monday and that cycle starts all over again. And sooner or later, they may get diagnosed with black lung disease. Well, you know, they've been trying to say that that is what's going on for a while. Or they've documented what, in fact, happened to them before and then after their diagnosis.
You were here in 2010 for one of these lectures. Now you're coming back. Cam Bush, why did you decide to bring Dr. Barnwell back?
Well, Dr. Barnwell and I met probably 12 years ago in Washington, D.C., when she was conducting a workshop at the Washington National Cathedral. So I was so impressed with her. And at that time, I was on the board of the Society for the Arts and Healthcare. So I proposed that she be our keynote speaker. So that was a long time ago. So do you remember that, Dr. Barnwell?
I do.
And then I moved from that situation into visiting D.C. one time and seeing Dr. Barnwell at the Birchmere, and enjoyed that so much. And then it was time for me to think about having Dr. Barnwell as part of my lecture series that I endowed in the year 2000. So I just was excited to contact her. She said yes, and I knew that she would be bringing her wealth of information as well as all of her talents to Chattanooga. She's a wonderful singer, spiritual leader, composer, master teacher, just has so many qualities and has so much breadth of diversity that she can provide for us. And she was wonderful 2010, and we've had many requests to have her back. So thank you for saying yes again, Dr. Barnwell.
You are welcome. I'm looking forward to coming back.
What is a lecture of yours like? Because the TED Talk, for example, you had a lot of audience participation, a lot of singing.
You know, things vary. One of my major goals is to get people who are together to sing, because I feel like it's important. That doesn't always happen when I lecture, but most of the time it does. At least they get a sample of what it's like to be sitting next to someone they may or may not know, and then find that they actually enjoy hearing their voice with the voices of people on either side of them. And, you know, everybody winds up smiling. And that's a really, really good thing. So if I do a lecture where, for whatever reason, there is not much opportunity for me to get the audience to sing, then I hope that, at some point on the agenda, there is room for a community thing, which is, you know, an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours of people literally just singing together. And I don't mean, you know, Mary Had a Little Lamb. I mean really interesting, challenging, complicated kinds of things that have positive messages, but also have harmony, four or five part harmony sometimes that people move into very quickly. I'm always surprised, and they are always more surprised.
What are some of your favorite compositions to use in those situations?
You know, I come out of a tradition of African-American singing, and so it's not unusual for me that this happens. But much of that is the body of song that I know best. Sometimes I will include songs that come from protest movements, et cetera, which, you know, I feel a certain need for during this time. And so there's a wide body. I'm a composer. Sometimes I include songs that I've written myself. But there are contemporary songs. There are songs from Africa, which are chants that do certain things. That cause people to listen in certain ways. There are a lot of songs. I have a database on my iPhone that has a list of all my songs, and I've never added them up, but they're in categories so that I can, you know, I can include chants, I can include lullabies, I can include spirituals, I can include more contemporary things written by other people. So it's a wide variety of music that I use.
Hallelujah, since I lay my burden down, oh glory, glory. Hallelujah, since I lay my burden down, here we go. Well, this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Well, this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it
That's
shine.
Dr. Esai Barnwell. She'll be here in Chattanooga on Thursday, May 18th for the Cam Bush Endowed Lecture Series. We'll have more in just a moment.
Support for WUTC comes from Village Virtual, providing online summer courses for K-12 students for both new learning and academic credit recovery. Students can catch up or get ahead this summer with online learning. Information at villagevirtual.com.
Support for WUTC comes from Merchants on Main, a collective of retailers on Chattanooga's south side offering handcrafted decor, local pottery, and more. More information at Merchants on Main Facebook.
The 17th annual Cam Bush Endowed Arts for Health Lecture Series is coming up Thursday, May 18th at the Hunter Museum of American Art. It's brought to you by CHI Memorial Foundation and the Hunter Museum of American Art. And today we're speaking with Dr. Barnwell, as well as Cam Bush herself. Dr. Barnwell is an accomplished musician, actress, author, lecturer, composer, and her compositions, one of her most famous, well-known compositions is called Wanting Memories. We're going to hear a little bit of that and then continue our conversation.
I am sitting.
It seems like one of your most popular compositions is Wanting Memories. There are quite a few performances of that on YouTube, just for example. What is Wanting Memories about? Where does that come from?
Wanting Memories was part of a suite of songs that was commissioned for dance, and it is actually my number one bestseller. It was number one all over the state of Hawaii for almost a year because
wow.
It was recorded by a very famous Hawaiian singer. Wanting Memory talks about having spent an amount of time with someone who taught a young child who she was by saying to her, you know, you don't necessarily need to have mirrors in your house to know who you are and what you look like.
I think all the things that made me feel so wonderful when I was young. I think all the things that made me laugh, made me dance, made me sing. I think all the things that made me grow into a being full of pride. Think all these things.
And this elder person taught this child who she was. And in this ballet that the music was for, the grandmother dies. And at that point, the child has grown into an adult and is looking back on those times when she was learning who she was, what she looked like, not because she was looking in a mirror, but because she was described to herself by someone who really loved her. All of the experiences that this person gave to me, now that she is gone physically, I have those things to remind me of who I am and of who she was.
The songs, the singing of the civil rights movement compared to today with movements like the Black Lives Matter movement and the Women's March that happened in D.C., seems like there's just not as much singing these days as there used to be. Why do you think that is?
I think that is because of our technology. People really know each other in a very different way, very often without ever seeing each other. But they may send 10, 20 texts every day. And that is the connection between them. When we didn't have that kind of technology, we came together as human beings in groups, in pairs, and we found ways of making a connection that was lasting. And, you know, we had things like Christmas carols or Hanukkah songs or songs for the new year or, you know, a Valentine message or happy birthday. And we have very few of those opportunities, even in our places of our sacred spaces. So I'm finding that, you know, the choir may sing in a church, but the participants in the audience, in the congregation, don't get to sing. They get to listen. And even what we listen to socially is changing. I realized about a year ago that the new music, which would include hip-hop, new social music, those singers don't even have backup singers anymore. They are just out there by themselves with their band. And sometimes their band is not made up of musicians. It's made up of a keyboard and other auditory equipment. And so we have moved to a point where we do things individually, and our mode of connection is like a web of unseen wires that connect us together through email and texting and that kind of thing, which I think marks a radical shift from how we connected with each other in the past. And I think that I don't know where that's going to end, but I'm not sure that I'm comfortable with it at all.
What would you like to see changed? How would you have people do that differently?
Well, I would really like to see people coming back together and doing things together and not feeling as if they can do everything by themselves. I conduct a monthly community sing here in Washington, D.C., and we may have upwards of 100 or more people every month. And that, to me, is an indication that people really do want opportunities to sing in a non-judgmental way, just coming together and singing. I try to program songs that address things that may be happening in society that suggest ways of coping with things that frustrate us or the things that even make us feel really, really good that we want to share. And I am amazed because I've been doing this in Washington, D.C. for 30 years. And I would say to you that a good 50% come most of the time, and they bring other people, and they bring other people. And so I have sort of ready evidence that people really do want ways to connect with each other where they're in the same room, breathing the same air, and that they look for other opportunities. Now, at the end, people will say, oh, there's going to be a thing at the so-and-so. There's going to be a gathering, let's go sing there. And so these 100 or so people look for other opportunities and invite people to come and sing with them. And where I've gone in various places all over the country, many times I wind up being invited back. There are 5-day workshops that I do where I've been going for many, many years, close to 30 years, actually, or a little bit more. And part of what I do is not just to get people to sing, but to help people understand the concept of worldview and how an African worldview differs from a Eurocentric worldview in terms of how we acknowledge music, how we utilize music, and the ways in which we utilize music. And so for me as an African American, there's a history of music, you know, beginning in Africa and coming with us over to these shores and then being used as a way of communicating everything. And some of that everything had to do with our displeasure with being enslaved and talking about how we can find ways to leave that circumstance. And I feel like the music that we're writing today, the music that our hip-hop artists are writing and performing today, are the same kind of documentation as the spiritual was. And I feel that Eurocentric music has a slightly different perspective, and it's used for pleasure. It needs to be beautiful. It requires the ability to read music in order to consider yourself a musician. That is not the case in an African-American worldview. And these are not judgments. They are simply differences that I have observed. And what I observe is that the way in which we create and use our language defines the worldview that we have. And so if you say, you know, what is a musician? In certain contexts, a musician is someone who reads music, plays well, has good technique, et cetera. If you say that in another instance, then it's someone who, you know, can turn an audience on their heels with the way in which they just sang. How did they learn that song? They heard somebody else sing it, and now they're singing it their way.
You'll be here Thursday, May 18th, for the lecture at the Hunter Museum. Cam Bush, who are you looking for to come out to this lecture?
Well, we have a broad audience, so it will be the art community, and that would be in actually the arts. So it would be musicians, it would be visual artists, dancers, performers of various kinds, as well as the medical community. So nurses, physicians, physical therapists, creative arts therapists. We have 10 creative arts therapists in our city now. So the arts and healing are very important, and I think that people are realizing that now with our world conditions. Actually, the arts are a communicator. They are a connector. So it's a universal connector. And as Dr. Barnwell was describing about the power of music, music can be a metaphor for that coming together. You know, the voices come together. The conversations can begin. And we are all together being empowered by Dr. Barnwell and her facilitation of the Community Sing.
And this question is for either one of you. What are you hoping that people get out of this lecture?
I'm hoping people will continue to be inspired to gather as community. And as you have spoken, you know, the technology is wonderful, but we need to have both. And so I think that there is a longing for this, and I think that I would love to see that we would continue to have Community Sings in Chattanooga after you leave. I know there are many people that would welcome that.
I think that would be great.
Thank you both so much for speaking with us today. Thursday, May 18th, 5 o'clock, the Hunter Museum of American Art. Where can people go for tickets, for more information, and all of that?
They can go to the memorial website, memorial.org/foundation. Or they can call 423-495-4141.
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Well, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine.
And that is it for Roundabout Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller. Thank you all for listening.